All right. Thank you, Brother Derek. Yes, as you've indicated, you can go ahead and turn your cameras on. We like to see faces just as though we're sitting in a hall and looking out at our brethren all around. And we would encourage you, if you're going to, with a study of this size, we're going to ask that if you would like to be recognized, that you raise your electronic hand. That's the little, if you look on the bottom of the screen, that's that little indicator. And that will let me not only request people in order, but it'll also allow me to acknowledge you as well. And then we'll ask, after you've given your comments or your questions or whatever, that you go ahead and remute yourself. And our technical host will help as well clean up any leftovers. You know, this subject, turbulent times, I was asked sometime late last year, we need your study questions. And we had had a study on this earlier in the year, in 2020, in Orlando. And, you know, as we look back at the last 14 months or so, I think we can say that our world has changed. And it's changed in a dramatic way. And a couple of points. This is not only just our world. This is around the world. So whether we talk to brethren in Africa and Europe or wherever, Australia, the world has changed and we are in very turbulent times. Now, just to recount and recap as we look back at just the year 2020, of course, we had an unexpected surprise, which is called a pandemic. It's interesting because in my work, prior to retiring in October, that was one of my duties, was pandemic planning for a hospital chain. So from my standpoint, it wasn't unexpected, but neither was it expected until it popped up. But so we had a pandemic. This caused a lot of changes in people's ability to work, which affected economics, and that's rippling down even to our day today. This also caused a lot of psychological stress. We found out as humans that we need hugs and we need social interaction and we need to see each other face to face. And so it caused a lot of stresses there, and those continue down to our day. Economically, the world's GDP has gone way down, and now we're trying to get out of the ditch, so to speak. So economically, that's caused issues as well. And of course, we all realize politically in the United States, we're more polarized than has ever been, I think. And it's not just the United States. If we look around the world, there's polarization going on in many, many countries. What you find out when people are stressed, all of these things come out. And this has been a major cause of stress. So what else is new? You know, we all understand that these are the times in which we live. But I think it's important that we talk through these things. We look and assure one another with scriptural promises. And also that we set some expectations as to, you know, what else may accompany this. So these are some of the things. And the reason we want to do that is so that we are psychologically and spiritually prepared for what may come next. I could ask the question, who knows what's going to come next? But quite frankly, the answer would be, well, we don't quite know. We have some predictions of some things that may occur, but we don't quite know. So how do we prepare ourselves for these turbulent times? And in order to frame this up, we want to go back and look at the scriptures. And this goes to our first question. How does the Bible describe our day? How does the Bible describe what we're seeing today? And we just opened it up for discussion. Any thoughts, any scriptures, any descriptive terms? Brother Paul Lagneau has his hand up.
Psalm 46, the first three verses, says, God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way, and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, and the mountains quake with their surging. And of course, the rest of that psalm is very beautiful. I love verse 9. He makes wars cease to the ends of the earth, and so forth, when he's exalted among the nations. So I learned recently, and I haven't checked it out, but the expression fear not is found 365 times in the scriptures. And that those verses said, we will not fear. And so every day of the year, perhaps we should find one of those scriptures that says, fear not. And the opposite of fear, of course, is love. Perfect love casts out fear. I'll stop there. Over.
Okay, very good. So you bring out one of the many scriptural references to really a time of trouble prior to things getting resolved in God's way. And it's very important that we reassure one another to fear not. You know, we can get anxiety. We can get nervous. We can get fearful. But if we stop and think and look, then we have an opportunity and support one another. Then we can talk to each other as, are these founded fears or are they unfounded fears? And how can we help each other? Brother Jim Parkinson?
Yeah, it's described as a time of trouble, yes, but also a time of vengeance and a time of wrath, a day of wrath.
All right. Very good. And we have the time of trouble, and that kind of, you know, we naturally think back to the Daniel chapter 12 there, where it's described as that, but it's also described as a time of vengeance and wrath. Sister Gretchen Grice.
Well, I'm looking at the scripture in Joel 2, 30. I guess through 32. And I will show wonders in the heavens and in the earth, blood. And this is the Lord's great day. And I will show, wonders in the heavens and the earth, blood and fire and pillars of smoke. And the sun shall be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and terrifying day of the Lord cometh. And the good part, and it shall come to pass that whoever shall call upon the name of Jehovah will be delivered. For in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem, there shall be those that escape, as Jehovah has said, amongst the remnant, those who Jehovah doth call. So I would say it's called the Lord's great day.
Okay, very good. So we have many descriptions of this day, don't
Thank
we?
You.
But even in the various descriptions and the various features that they describe, there are some commonalities. It's going to be a great and sometimes they say awesome or very fearful day. And that's what the world is going to see. Any other, descriptions of this day? I've got a couple other scriptures I could have read. Sister Betty Biggs.
2 Peter 3:11. Seeing okay. That these things are thus all to be dissolved. What manner of persons ought ye to be in all holy living and godliness?
Okay, and I think that is one of the key scriptures. Okay, we find ourselves in this situation, and sometimes it's pretty horrible. But the question is, what manner of persons ought we to be? So what should our perspective be? And this is where we can really help one another a lot. As we look at, well, what kind of people should we be? How should we react? And, I think this is really key. Brother Len?
Scripture in Zephaniah 3:8. Therefore wait ye for me, saith Jehovah, until the day that I rise up for the prey, for my determination or my judgment. is to gather the nations, that I may assemble the kingdoms, to pour upon them mine indignation, even my fierce anger, for all the earth shall be devoured with the fire of my jealousy.
Okay. So you bring out the point that, you know, we do have to wait on the Lord. And by the way, as with any life circumstances, the situations we find ourselves in, our perspective should be, how is this for my growth and edification? What's the Lord's will in this? You know, I can tell you that there are brethren in Africa, some that I know fairly well, and they're under civil war now. They're having trouble finding food, even if they have money. So we realize these situations are allowed by the Lord to prove us, to try us in the fire. Brother Dan Wessel?
Yes. Here are some descriptions of how we're not to be, and it's of these last days. It's 2 Timothy 3:1-13. But know this, that in the last days, grievous times shall come. And this is the American Standard Version. For men shall be lovers of self, lovers of money, boastful, haughty, railers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, implacable, slanderers, without self-control, fierce, no lovers of good, traitors, headstrong, puffed up, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And I think that's a great description of our day, is that there's all this emphasis on entertainment and not worship, not recognizing, where do I come from? I'm in this great creation. Who do I acknowledge for that? So this is all gone. They're not lovers of God, holding a form of godliness, but having denied the power thereof. From these also turn away, for of these they that creep into houses and take captive silly women laden with sins, led away by diverse lusts, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. And that's another item, I think, that's been a casualty of our day, is the truth. There's so many spins on all the different situations and experiences in life, especially in the political world, as you were bringing out. And then, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. And even as Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses, so do these also withstand the truth. Men corrupted in mind, reprobate concerning the faith, but they shall proceed no further, for their folly shall be evident unto all men, as theirs also came to be. So the Lord's going to overrule eventually. And I'll stop. Thanks.
Okay. And you know, that's a really great list of our day, the description. I've got it according to King James, but it's like lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, and unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high-minded, lovers of pleasures, more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof. That pretty much sums up our day. Brother Jim, your thoughts?
Yes, in Daniel 12:4, it says, but thou, O Daniel, shut up thy word and seal the book, even to the time of the end. Many should run to and fro, and knowledge will be increased. And you can see how people are running to and fro. You just go down the highway, you can see cars are just, they're running all kinds of ways. And there's so many that are denying the God today than compared to in the past. So we are getting to the end of the times. Over.
Okay, very good. And I know one of the comments after my Vesper last night, we closed with the Lord bless you and keep you and shine his countenance upon thee, that song. And one of the brethren said, well, you know, that's how our high school closed their day with that song. But that was in that day, and that would no way happen today, would it? So we realize that we're in changing times, and that times are getting worse. but we should not be disheartened. Brother Tom?
Yes, another indication of the times in which we're living, a certain policeman should have had his knee in prayer, not on someone's neck.
Right. We see, well, there are so many ills in the world. And, you know, the one message that we can give to the world and remind ourselves of as well, the only solution to all the world's problems is God's plan, period. That's the only solution. Nothing, you know, Democrats, Republicans, independents, nobody has a plan that's going to work. Nobody has a plan, but God does, and God has the only solution. You know, I've heard it said that the only people without problems are in the grave. Everybody's got problems, and our world has problems as well. But God's plan is the one that will carry forth on these things. Okay, let's go on to our next question, which is, why did the pastor recommend that the consecrated not vote or get involved in politics? And this may be a sore point with some, but we're just going to ask, what did the pastor say? And if you've got the question book, it's on page 849. He gives a very direct response to this question. So what did the pastor recommend the consecrated recommend that the consecrated not vote or get involved in politics? Why would we do that? You know, with our, all of us understanding our consecration vow, why would we choose not to get involved in politics? And this really goes down through the age. I mean, it's independent of our, the day in which we live. Brother Len, get us started.
I will, yes. And I'll just read one quote from, this is, I've actually looked at his quotes during his ministry. This is the first one, written in 1893, appears in reprint 1531. I think it's a concise statement of his opinion on this. Says, as concerns voting, our covenant with the Lord and our fidelity to him practically makes us aliens in our relations to all human governments, and that therefore we would best take no part in the election of officers or in the management of the affairs of this world. That was his earliest statement. Now, there were other statements that qualified that a little bit as he went through his ministry.
Okay, and that's a great start. That shows that he's saying, don't get entangled with these matters. Stay clear. And, you know, this is a continual temptation even in our day, isn't it? We all tend to take sides on things. And with our office, we need to be observing, not participating. Let's see. Next, we had Brother George Kuzman.
Well, this may not be an exact answer to your question. It's sort of a testimony. I lived through the 60s, so this was like 10 years before I discovered that the Bible students even existed. But because of what I experienced during the 60s, first president I voted for was John Kennedy, and you know what happened there. And of course there was Martin Luther King, and then there was Robert Kennedy, and they even put a bullet in George Wallace. So I recognized by the end of the 60s that there were forces operating in this world that had guns and ammunition and had an agenda, and we're not afraid to employ any means to foil any system of voting. So I gave up voting like 10 years before I even knew the Bible students were in existence. So it was easy for me to make the transition, even though I came out of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, thank you. And I think you see this disillusionment with the political system. It's very dysfunctional. It seems that the higher the level of the system, the more dysfunctional it is. And so even for no spiritual reasons, we realize many people check out because it's broken. Sister Gretchen?
I just have a scripture in Philippians 3:20 where it talks about our place of citizenship is in heaven. And I think Brother Russell discusses this too in his writings, that this is a very hot topic even amongst the brethren. I mean, it's bad enough in society, but to have this amongst the brethren, that they're actually spending a lot of time on this, is kind of, for me, I try to stay away from that. And on Facebook, the brethren are posting, and I choose not to do that. And sometimes we'll actually defriend people that do that. And I think that we need to keep our self-focus on above. Thank you.
Okay, very good. And you bring up an important point. You know, we all at times need to have studies that remind us of what our responsibilities are and maybe cause us to question some things we're doing if we're getting active in these areas. You know, yesterday, I think, or yesterday evening or Friday evening, Brother Len Grice related how as a youth in the 60s that he got involved with, you know, singing peace songs and so forth. And one of the brethren questioned him about it. And really it's buying in and engaging into those systems. It's not that we don't see injustice and recognize it, but we don't want to get swept away with it as well. So why did the pastor recommend that we not vote or get involved in politics? That was a recommendation. Brother Michael?
Well, I wasn't going to quote the pastor, but I was going to just suggest that anytime you take a side in a political controversy, you're perceived as being an enemy by those on the opposite side. Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to decrease your effectiveness in reaching those of all political persuasions? Our Lord wants us to let our light shine before men, not just those on the right or those on the left, but all.
All right. And it's taking a side. And, you know, if you took a side in either the last several presidential elections, for instance, in the United States, you would be disappointed by at least some of the behaviors and decisions that were made. You would be disappointed from the standpoint of your core beliefs. And so we should not be engaging from that respect. Brother Bob and Brand.
Well, not on the last question you asked, but just to comment on earlier discussion, I think most brethren don't participate or don't vote in like federal elections. I know many who do, but they just don't verbalize it, I guess. But quite a few will vote in local elections, like the PTA, for example. If there's something coming up that's going to affect their children in school, they will cast a vote then. Or if there is an objectionable business that's about to start a store or a facility that's a quarter of a mile from their home, they will get very involved. So brethren do make distinctions. It's not, I'm not going to vote for anything or not be, whether it's federal or state or local. There's quite a bit of variation as to what choices brethren make, especially on the local level. I would guess that maybe even a majority of brethren, when they've had children, have voted for things related, maybe I'm wrong on that, but school things and any kind of like objectionable business establishment that's going to affect the quality of their neighborhood.
Okay. Very well noted. And, you know, this is why the pastor didn't command this. He recommended this. And the consequences, if we get diverted and get swept away in some of these movements, is, you know, there will be consequences in our lives. The Lord will permit it, and perhaps it will cause us to change our behaviors. Sister Teresa.
Sorry, I had a hard time demuting. In Jeremiah 17:5, it is written, "Cursed is the man who places his trust in the arms of a man." So it's not that we do not approve of the efforts that some are making, but quite honestly, the only man that could ever be trusted on the face of this earth was Jesus. And it is dangerous to put our trust to vote for someone, even though he's well-intended, because humans change and they can be subject to things that happen to them and they can disappoint us. So it is not safe to put our trust in the arms of any man. Better to just rely on the Lord. Over.
Okay, very good. And, you know, once again, are we going to get entangled? You'll remember that we're described as ambassadors for Christ. And when I look at ambassadorial duties, let's say that we've got the ambassador from Japan here in our city. Does that person observe the political systems? Absolutely. Does he observe the social systems? Absolutely. Does he vote in local elections? No. Is he subject to many of the laws? No. He is independent, and he has to maintain that independent perspective for credibility's sake. So it's important, especially as we look at ambassadorship. An ambassador doesn't vote for political offices in the countries in which he's placed. He's a stranger. He's an observer. And he's a facilitator there. Let's see.
Bob, I saw Norm Zendler raising his hand in his window.
We're only going to take hands on the screen because we have over 120 brethren. So, Brother Norm, if you look at the bottom.
I don't know how to do it.
Brother Norm, if you look at the bottom.
I don't know how to do it.
Brother Norm, if you look at the bottom of your screen, there's a little hand there. That's what you need to do. Sister Lee Manzik.
Thank you, Brother Bob. I'll just comment, when I worked or had worldly friends, you know, once you retire, you don't have many worldly friends anymore. You don't associate. You have enough brethren. But my comment was always, when asked, I would always say, my candidate isn't running.
Very good. Brother Tom Adams.
Yes, Brother Rob. In our day, the Lord said that every man's hand would be against his neighbor. And we find that people have to be careful about the words they use. Get condemned about, they have a bias about skin color, nationality, religion, political party, competition, every man's hand against his neighbor. And it's very obvious because news channels have people contributing all their different thoughts and knowledge and the things they say. Over.
All right, very good. Brother Alex?
Well, whenever I think of politics, what comes to mind is Brother David Duran's discourse, and where he says pretty strongly how we have to look at the example of Babylon, and they were considered harlot because they entangled themselves with worldly systems and politics. So us getting involved, we would be doing the same thing. So we do not want to be involved in harlotry with this world. And another one, as far as like local politics and so on, is Brother OB stressing how we are followers of Christ, and his words were pretty good, that when we introduce ourselves, we're not going to say, well, I'm a Christian, and then I'm a PTSO member, and list all these things that we're involved in, but we are supposed to, according to the scriptures, be Christians. That should be the only thing that should define us.
Okay, very good. And we're going to go back to the question, why did the pastor recommend that consecrated not vote or get involved? Does anyone have the question book up with the answer? Because the question is, will Christians play for thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth? So shouldn't we get involved in politics? And the pastor has a rather interesting answer. Does someone have that and would like to read it? It's on page 849 in the question book, question 2 on that page. If not, I'll go through some of the highlights. He says, you know, we are called to a heavenly calling, a high calling that's much above anything here on earth. A man cannot run for two offices at the same time. Isn't that an interesting statement? So he's saying, you know, your affections are going to be split if you're getting involved in this. And that's the danger. It's not politics per se. It could be hobbies. It could be recreation. Could be other things, but we don't want to be divided. Romans 12:2, do not become entangled with the things of this world. And that's a constant problem. That's a constant temptation. In Philippians 3:13-14, it says, ye are not of this world. And by default, if that's the case, then why are we getting entangled with the things of the world unnecessarily? And then he continues, the chief duty of the Christian is to avoid entangling alliances with worldly systems and to devote himself to preparing for the kingdom of our Lord. So remember, Ford used to have job number one was, you know, quality. Well, job number one for us is our consecrations, and we need to not lose track of that. And then he closes by saying the great Messiah will, in God's due time, set up his kingdom and establish righteousness in the earth. And that's when we can fully engage. We're going to take Beth and Owen's comment, and then we're going to go on to our next question.
Thank you. I'm really glad you're considering this question, and I think it's valid. I agree with Brother Russell, and I agree with the comments that I've been hearing. I think, though, that there is a distinction that should be made between being aware of what's going on and being well informed about what's going on versus becoming entangled in the political process. And I think that what's happening, and it's unique in our era, is that the vast majority of the nominally Christian world has supported a particular party and a particular leader. And that has added greatly to the polarization. And if I'm trying to be involved in the harvest work, I feel a need to be able to have an intelligent conversation with people on both sides of that issue. And so I don't think that it's becoming entangled in politics to discuss the issues that people are worried about. I think it would be becoming involved in politics to advocate a political party, advocate a political program to remedy the problem. I think the Christians who have been supporting the right wing have a misconception about what God's plans and goals are. And so I try to engage in what I do. I try to engage them in discussion. And so I agree with everything that's been said, but I also think that we do have a responsibility to not just listen to news that we find appealing to ourselves and that confirm our own personal viewpoints. You know, it's good to be well informed on all sides and to really understand why somebody would support one party or the other.
Okay, very good. And, you know, part of our ambassadorial duties, an ambassador doesn't go to a country and just lock himself up. They need to understand the mechanics. They need to have feet on the ground, as they say in Africa. They need to understand the situation. So it's not that we're politically ignorant, but we're not We're engaged in what's happening, but we're not taking sides. So we're understanding. Brother Norm got his hand up, so I'm going to take his comment, and then we'll go on to our next question. Okay, Brother Norm, you need to unmute.
There you go. Okay, can you hear me?
We can.
The comment I wanted to make before was the church is in the world, but not of it. We're taken out of the world to become a people for his name. The church is not the conscience of the world to direct its affairs or to solve its social ills. The church must keep separate from the world because it says that friendship with the world is enmity with God. The Lord's apostles had no time for politics or social reforms. Therefore, our time, our energy, and our means are used to disciple for Christ and to help our brethren stand. Paul said, there's one thing I do, and to preach only Jesus Christ and to him crucified, unquote.
All right, very good. And, you know, it's just like was mentioned earlier today, when Jesus was attempted to be entrapped by the Sadducees and Pharisees, you know, he said, well, should we pay taxes? And he showed the coin. And he said, render unto Caesar those things that are Caesar's. So it's not that we're anti-government or we're pro-government. We participate at whatever level we have to for baseline, but we don't get involved. We have a mission that is much more important than any political cause, period. Much more important. Okay, we're going to go on to our next question. How should we react to government? How should we react to government?
Oh, boy.
The scriptures do give us some guidance on this. I mean, Brother Len, get us started. You've got to unmute.
Just testing you. 1 Peter 2:13 and 14 gives us this. Says, submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king or as the one in authority, or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. I think that gives us certain mandatory things that we must respond to. For example, we must obey the laws. We must pay taxes. We must participate jury duty if we're called. We must serve as a witness if we're called. And for those of us in the era, you must register for the draft. Those are things that are mandatory, and we should. Now, other things are voluntary, and one of the things just mentioned was voting. That's a voluntary thing. You don't have to do that. It's not required at this point. But interestingly enough, the pastor had words to say on that, too, which are beyond the scope of this. But I think those are the five things I see as mandatory reactions to government.
Okay, very good. I know we had one sister in Orlando that worked for the county tax collector. And one of the requirements of being employed with her was that you voted. So she agreed with the pastor that she shouldn't get involved in the system, but she did register to vote as required by her employer. She did go in the booth. She did make one vote for one office, her employer, and that was it. So, you know, this is not a thus saith the Lord. We realize there are many different circumstances, but once again, don't get entangled in things that you don't have to, or minimize that entanglement. Brother George.
Scriptures advise us to pray for governments that we may, as Christians, have a peaceful life. Sort of an aside on what Brother Len was talking about. When I first came to the truth, I remember reading in the reprints about brethren who were contemporaries of Brother Russell and actually served in the armed forces. And there were letters sent to the Don about their experience, and some of them had almost miraculous protection, and you know, they didn't want to kill anybody, and of course they didn't want to be killed, and how they were protected during their service in the First World War. And some, you know, of course there were brethren in France who were forced into the army. And one talked about being wounded a couple of times, but the Lord spared his life. That's enough out of me.
Yeah, and, you know, we do have obligations to government, not always what we would desire. I remember in Orlando, Brother Naroski, an old Polish brother that was in World War I. He was conscripted. He had no choice. He did not carry a gun, and he told me that he noticed that other men would try to get next to him because he never got shot. He was gassed twice. One time he was thrown on a heap of supposed dead bodies, and he woke up. So, you know, the Lord does provide as well. Brother Jim Parkinson, your thoughts on how we should react to government, and if you have any scriptures along those lines.
Romans 13, starting with the first verse. Let every soul be in subjection to the higher powers, for there is no power but of God, and the powers that be ordained of God. Therefore, he that resisteth the power withstandeth the ordinance of God, and they that withstand shall receive to themselves judgment. For the rulers are not a terror to the good work, but to the evil. So, even if there are times when one cannot approve of what's going on, it's not up for us to be lopping a brick through the fellow's window.
Right, very good. And that was one of the scriptures I had as well, that we're to be subject to the higher powers, that, you know, the Lord has put them in power. It's not a mistake. You know, can you imagine what Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego thought when they said, okay, if you won't do this, we're going to throw you in the furnace. And they subjected themselves, and they were protected of the Lord. Any other scriptures that we can think of, Steve? Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I was actually thinking along the book, the lines of the book of Daniel, where in Daniel 6, a law was craftily created to ensnare Daniel, you know, using the actual, his own custom of praying to God. So on that occasion, Daniel ignored the decree of the king and obviously suffered the consequences. So there are times when we have to use our Bible-trained conscience and discernment, and sometimes take a stand which is in opposition to what the government actually wants us to do.
All right, very good. And you know, Brother Len listed out the things that we should do. And Brother Steve, you brought out the point that, you know, when it goes against our spiritual conscience, then we have to make a stand. But that's it. You know, when it's, do you pay taxes? No, we pay taxes, and all these other things. But if it's a matter of spiritual significance, then we can take a stand and God will overrule or moderate the circumstances. Brother Ken?
Brother Bob, you mentioned the three Hebrews willing to suffer the consequences of not bowing to the image. In a little different mode, Apostle Paul leveraged his Roman citizenship to his good. And that's in Acts chapter 22. So there is value to recognizing your citizenship on this side of the veil.
Yeah, excellent, excellent point, Brother Ken. And we realize that the Apostle Paul really parlayed his citizenship to do things so that ultimately he could be, you know, taken and die in Rome for Christ's sake. And as a result, if you think about it, had he invoked it and not asked for higher authorities and higher courts, it would have ended right there and the witness wouldn't have been anywhere near what it was. So we exercise our rights within the law of the land. Brother Bob Brain.
Yeah. I enjoy talking about, in a limited way, time-wise, the political scene with brethren. You know, kind of be careful who I talk to, or some don't like to talk about it, which is fine. But I have found that kind of a cross-section of brethren, if they could vote, or if they wanted to vote, or if they were going to vote, they would vote more on the political left. And other brethren who are very consecrated as well would vote more on the political right. So it's not as if it was okay for us to vote, if it was like scripturally like endorsed, then we would all be on the same side. We would not. There's a substantial division among in the fellowship on the good and the bad of the different sides of the political spectrum. So it's probably a good topic not to get heavily involved in discussion, because then we're avoiding the more important issues regarding the real solution, which is the Lord's kingdom. But I have just found it interesting that brethren that are on the same page in terms of an appreciation of God's plan, the high calling, the hope that we have, are on very, very different, take very, very different positions on current day issues in politics, but just don't make it a huge part of their life.
Right. Well, you know, I look at it this way. I have chosen not to vote. But had I voted in the last couple of elections, I would have voted against the Lord's will. Because, you know, we have these statements that God sets one up and puts down another. And the person I would have voted for would not have been elected. Therefore, I was going to go against God. So, you know, in a way, it's a way of being subservient to God. God's will be done, and our vote won't make a difference. Brother Norm, and then we're going to go on to the next question. Go ahead and unmute, Brother Norm.
Okay. In the first volume, page 266, it says that we should obey all except where they conflict with God's law. And if we're before a draft board, they should understand that our enemies are not to be destroyed and violence is not to be used. Briefly, Matthew 5:43, love your enemies and bless them. Luke 6:27, love your enemies and do good to them. Romans 12, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. And Matthew 26, Jesus said, for they that take the sword shall perish by the sword. And one more, 1 Peter 3:9, don't render evil for evil or railing for railing, but on the contrary, blessings. It's full in the New Testament of this. So how can they expect us to do something contrary to the will of God?
Right. God's will is being done in all things. And, you know, kind of a recap on this. The one thing that I really appreciate is that we should not stand out as individuals before government. We shouldn't be political advocates on one side or another. And the apostle gives us the background of that so that we can live peaceably. Because we have to live peaceably, at least for periods of time, in order to grow and develop our characters as well. Going on to the next questions. What opportunities does political change bring? So we're going to kind of step back now. What opportunities does political change bring? Brother George, get us started.
Yeah, your remarks triggered some, you know, feelings. I have to restrain myself, of course, from voting, because you can get caught up in the emotion of a situation, but and I've been, by the grace of God, successful. Where am I going here? I lost my train of thought. A political change is, I believe, a part of God's plan. We were in our study in the faith chapter in the character study book, and they had a prophecy from Isaiah where Isaiah was told, well, the king that you have now is a good king, but the king that's going to come into power next will be an evil king. So that's part of God's plan to lift up one and put down another. Just that was one of your comments, Brother Bob.
Okay, very good. And, you know, as we look at the situation, let's look at the prior administration, the current administration. Prior administration was very pro-Israel. The current administration, we're seeing, I mean, we're still looking, but they're not as strong pro-Israel in any case. We haven't seen many actions yet that really reveal what they're thinking and how that plays into God's plan as well. Brother Jim.
Well, I think of the things that are happening in the world today, and at the fair booth, a lot of people would come and ask us, what in the world is going on? And so it does give us an opportunity to witness to others that we might not have had under more normal circumstances, where they tell us what's going on.
Okay, very good. So it does give us an opportunity for witnessing. And, you know, one of the wonderful things we've got, I mean, we're in a degree of political change right now, transition back and forth, and it's somewhat predictable. You know, we know that there'll be natural disasters. We know that there'll be fiascos with governmental policy and so forth. And as such, we can actually plan, you know, how would I witness to this if when this happens? It's an opportunity. And I think that's the important thing. It's an opportunity to witness. And we have time to prepare in advance. Understanding what the times in which we live, that there's going to be troubles, there's going to be wars, there's going to be conflicts. We can prepare ahead of time, and ask perhaps questions that would cause others to engage us. And then we might be able to give them a little bit of truth. What other opportunities does political change bring? Brother Len.
Well, I can think of a couple things as we go back into history. You know, we tend here, and probably most of us on this call are very U.S. concentric. But there is a wider world out there with more Bible students outside of the U.S. than there is inside the U.S. And I think back to 1989, for example, when communism fell, and you had the opportunity for those brethren to be opened up to the world. And the brethren jumped on that. Someone mentioned Brother Carl, for example, led a troop over to Romania to meet Sister Betty Precup, Brother Alex Sarge's aunt, not knowing anything, but they wanted to meet with the brethren over there. And that opened up the whole world of Bible students from that point on. That was a big political change that the brethren took advantage of. And I think that's what you see. You know, in the case of Israel, we know that when Israel is made a nation, an opportunity for the brethren to witness about Israel and the plan. So I think those are the things that we have to look for. And I think especially I look at the opening up of the world to us in being able to connect with brethren from all over. Brethren from Africa now are struggling, but that was another whole opportunity. So we need to look at political change, not just here in the U.S. We need to look at worldwide political change. We don't know, for example, how many in China. There might be those in China. I know some like Brother Todd Alexander, Brother Paul Malley, were going to China when that opened up. Now that's been closed off. So I think there are opportunities like that, because remember, I look at we mentioned ambassadors for Christ, and I look at five things. One of the things that we have to do is our responsibility is the development of others, to remain independent and objective, but it's always about the individual responsibility and dedication. That's what we have in this life. It's not about a global movement. It's about finding the individuals and connecting with them. And I think that's where political opportunities can pop up as global changes take place. Look at the opportunity to broadcast through the internet. And that was really political changes and that drove that. Al Gore, after all, invented the internet. So we have that opportunity. So I think those are the opportunities we look for that will connect us with those that may be seeking or are already holding it, and we just don't know about them. Over.
All right, very good. So, yeah, we see there are many opportunities out there, and, you know, we're now all part of the Zoom generation, and I notice we've become rather proficient at it as well, and this is really part of the technology changes as well as the openness. Now, you mentioned China, which is interesting because prior to Paul and Todd going over there, they had me make up a bunch of micro SD cards with the Bible students database on it. So it had all the volumes and the reprints and audio and a lot of reference books on that little microchip about the size of my little fingernail. And they took 20 or 30 of those over there. So even though China has shut everything down and closed off, we have no idea how that might affect things. Brother David or Sister Giselle.
That's Brother David. I appreciate this discussion, and I appreciate the comments that have been made up to this point. I guess I would just like to say that, you know, when we see political change in the world, and I get the impression that we're going to see more and more political change as we go forward. You know, the more change you have, the more people I think you are going to see that are disillusioned with the government that we have and with other governments in the world. And so this constant change of a political climate change is really an indication of the breakdown of the systems of this world. And with the breakdown of the systems of this world, I think people are going to become more and more discouraged with the government that we have or that they have. And maybe they'll be open to some other alternatives, and that'll give us an opportunity to show them the truth that we know. Over.
Okay, very good. So we have opportunities. We've got a couple more comments, then we're going to go on to our last question. Brother George.
Well, I'll thank Brother Len for opening this up to international comments, because that's something I remember distinctly from 1989. I think of the prophecy that Israel is going to be regathered from the east, west, north, and the south. But before 1989, they could not come from the north. So for me, that was a fulfillment of prophecy that I didn't think I'd live to see.
Yeah, thank you, Brother George. And, you know, the Aliyah from the United States has just started. I was looking at this during 2020, and they said the number of applications and people registered on their site in Israel had more than doubled in 1 year. So the one area that the Jews have still not returned to Israel from is the United States, and the political turbulence that we're under and the anti-Semitism that's rising may be contributors to that occurring in our day. Brother Owen or Beth, just briefly, and then we'll go on.
Thanks. I was thinking of our Lord's Day and the machinations of the Roman Empire must have been one of the major reasons why it says that all were in expectation of the Messiah. So that created an opportunity for Jesus. And I was thinking of Brother Peter Kalaman, who told me that when he was a young man, he was very upset about the situation for working men. He was in a terrible strait. And so he picked up a tract that was in the gutter that looked like it was from a Socialist Workers' Party meeting, announcing a Socialist Workers' Party meeting. And it turned out it was a Bible student meeting that put a tract together that looked a lot like a Socialist Workers' Party meeting and had a headline appropriate for that. And he went to that meeting, and that's where he heard about the idea of the kingdom. And so I think that we today have exactly the same kinds of situations, as has already been said. There are just so many ways in which people are looking and asking questions related to, say, George Floyd's situation or any number of things that are on people's minds right now. And with the internet, we have the unbelievable opportunity to focus on exactly a certain question that some one individual would have. And that's what's so, and we have more opportunities now, I think, than we've ever had before.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, there are many opportunities out there, but only if we look for them. You know, opportunities are fleeting. So when we see an opportunity, write down an idea, get an inspiration from a testimony or just a conversation with brethren, and then act on it. One of the things that we've done during the pandemic, because there's a lot of economic turmoil, is we've started doing blessing bags. I heard that from some of the brethren on the West Coast. And it's great. We keep them in the car, and when you see someone on the side, you give them a blessing bag which has food in it. We usually put $5 in there, but we also put a tract in there. So, you know, these are all opportunities. Our final question, and the real one that of most import to us, is how can we have peace during turbulent times? Now, I know Aaron Keymichael gave a lesson on this during this convention, but how can we have peace when things are pretty much messed up in the world? Sister Teresa.
Isaiah 26:3, thou wilt keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed on thee, because he trusteth in thee. So the only way to have peace is to have full trust in the Lord.
Right. And that's the only way to have full peace, isn't it? You know, if we have peace based on our stock portfolio, guess what? It's going to go up and down. If we have peace based on the government, you know, that will ebb and flow, and so forth. Brother Bob Brand.
Yeah, I think the feeling of turbulence have our turbulent situations that may engender a lack of peace. I think in just about everything, we don't know what the end result will be from a career decision or a financial decision, and the lack of knowing the end result can cause a lack of comfort or peace. But when we are acquainted with the plan of God, and we know what even though it's going to be difficult, we know what the final and also eternal result will be, not temporary, but everlasting. Focusing on that, learning more about that time can give us a lot of comfort in difficult times.
Okay, very good. Yeah. Having an understanding of God's plans and purposes, and, you know, one of the reasons that he gives us prophecy and lays out some of these things is so that we can have an understanding of what's coming down the road. You know, I especially appreciate Brother Jim Parkinson's thought, get out of debt and stay out of debt, because there's unstable financial times coming, and you don't want to be burdened unnecessarily, those kinds of things. We're going to just zip along here, and Brother Dan Wessel had a thought.
Yes, I did. And just a couple of scriptures. And this is, these came from our study in our own ecclesia, studying your study, Brother Bob. So Philippians 4:6-7, in nothing be anxious, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which passeth all understanding, shall guard your hearts and your thoughts in Christ Jesus. So when we see these fears all around us, whether it's the pandemic or the government changing and fear of, you know, more taxes or war that might happen, we know, as Brother Bob brought out, we know the final outcome. It's glorious. God has a plan for all. There will be deliverance for all. And it makes me think of the talk Brother Tom Ridgerello gave this morning on the Passover and on Easter or the memorial. And you go back to Exodus 14:13-14 in Moses' words. And Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still and see the salvation of Jehovah, which he will work for you today. For the Egyptians whom ye have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever. Jehovah will fight for you and ye shall hold your peace. And I'll stop there. Thanks.
Okay. We're going to take the last three comments and then we're going to close. Brother Randy Shahan.
Yeah. I think we went to happen at the close of this age, but we have a general idea that it's not going to be smooth and easy in these closing days, but we know what's beyond it. We know it's going to lead to this setting up of God's kingdom and blessings for all. So that's how we can have peace in the midst of trouble, even though it may affect us at times also. And we don't know what the pandemic is going to lead to, but we know that it's in the Lord's hands and he will overrule according to what's best. And we can look forward to a better time ahead in due time.
Yeah, very good. So it's very important that we focus on what is the long-term goal. When we stay focused on that goal, what's happening to us doesn't affect us as much. Brother Ken Allison?
Well, I think that peace comes from the message that we have of the gospel, and that's the good news. And we have opportunity to preach that gospel now as we see this turmoil coming out into the world. You know, in the final message of Revelation 22 and verse 10, and he said to me, do not seal up the words of the prophecy of this book, for the time is near. And so we need to redeem the time. That will keep us in peace. We stay under our covenant, redeeming the time. But he goes on to say, let the one who does wrong still do wrong, and let the one who is filthy still be filthy, and let the one who is righteous still practice righteousness. We need to, you know, we have many distractions, and though there's a lot of stuff that is wrong and that is filthy that is going on in this world, and the message to Laodicea is to buy gold refined in the fire to work on our character. And this is saying the time is short. Work on self, because Jesus intercedes here and says, behold, I am coming quickly and my reward is with me to render to every man according to what he has done. You know, it's a very scary time we live in. And, but you know, when you look back like to the church of Smyrna, which was the brave church, you know, there was lots of knowledge that was trying to intercede that was against the resurrection of Christ and the ransom. And that was Gnosticism. And we have lots of truth in the world that is against that, but we have that one message that, you know, it comes forth with today that Christ is risen, and you brought it forth in your talk, the power of the resurrection. We're the only one that knows that. We're the only one that can put that out. And I think, you know, with me, it also gets down to, growing where you're planted. You know, we have opportunities in our society. You know, not all of us can go and change things that are going on in the world, but we all have an opportunity to wish witness to those that are in dire straits over this division that we see in the government today. Thank you.
Great, great. Yeah, so let our light shine. I'm going to leave you with one chapter, one verse, and it's 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 11. This is something we can do for each and every one of us. Wherefore, comfort yourselves together and edify one another, even as also ye do. And so with that, we're going to close our study. Appreciate so much everyone's participation. Lord bless.